Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Actually, I use a phone when I give talks in Vancouver. I have a little thing over my ear, plugs into the phone. It worked really well until one day I was in the middle of a talk, the phone rang, someone called me up. So
that might happen.
We'll see what happens this time. I was asked to give a name for the talk, and it's good to have a focus. And I use the title, Intimate Heart. And let's look at the word heart. Conventionally, we often think of our physical organ, the heart, and often it's associated with our emotional side. But from what I understand in Buddhism, heart, when the term heart is used, it's more in the sense of maybe what we call these days core, something very central. Phrases like the core, the heart of the matter, meaning the very core, the very central thing. And one of the sutras we chant a lot is the Heart Sutra. And to me, it has that connotation, the word heart. It's a very central, it's pointing to central truth of Buddhism. Sometimes we come across the term heart-mind. So what is this very central, this very core mind? Maybe we could call it consciousness. And here I'd like to just jump aside for a little bit and make a comment. When we read Buddhist texts, what we're reading is the findings of people that have looked at themselves as existence and gained insight from that. They're not the truth in the sense of the truth, absolute truth or a truth that's given to us from something divine or so on. It's simply, as Zen is part of the wisdom traditions, it comes from us finding through our own observation, investigation, insight, and manifestation, finding our own truth. And it's a process, as we all know, of gradually learning methods that help or beneficial, that have helped, and gradually unfolding things. It's almost like taking layer of layer of something, a wonderful bright jewel. Gradually glows more and more. And I think when we come across terms like heart-mind, heart-consciousness, it's referring to this bright jewel that's at the heart of all of us, that shines brightly and clearly. In some traditions, it's sometimes referred to as the diamond mind. Precious. It is precious in many ways. It's also clear. It's also a sense of hardness in the sense that it's there's so much sureness of reaching our heart, that it's not contaminated, it's not bent out of shape by more superficial things in life. So heart really is referring to this in both the name of the talk and the way I understand it in Buddhism. big question. How do we get there? And this comes to our Zen practice. And I like to use an analogy that was used in medieval Christianity for spiritual practice. The spiritual work in those times was seen as a sculptor has a big block of wood, and the task is to produce this very precious, this way, very wonderful statue. And of course, it's the real heart of ourself. The statue is ourself, and the point of this is that it's not a matter of creating the statue. It's a matter of cutting away everything that is not the statue. And this is no different than Buddhist practice. At the core of us is this wonderful being. Our practice is, especially early on, is eliminating everything that's false, that's not true to our true being. And the more we do that, the more light can shine. I'm sure we all, as we practice awareness, we come to see ourselves in those times during the day where we just get consumed by something, upset by something, bent out of shape by something. And it consumes our full consciousness, and we lose touch with what's deeply at the core of our being. So how do we eliminate or get free of those times where, they're like old habits, old ways of being, old responses to situations that we've adopted somewhere in the past, maybe as a child or something, as a way to handle a situation. And it's become familiar with us, it's become part of us, and we just repeat those patterns. So what we're cutting away, eliminating, is these patterns that we've developed in the past that no longer serve us. And the way actually is very simple. It takes time, it's an art, it's a cultivation of not trying to suppress it, not trying to avoid it, but through the practice of opening, awareness, welcoming, of somehow to be able to experience it but not react to it. And I think if we look carefully at it, a lot of the problems, we could even say it feels painful for us when we experience this, is our reaction to it, our rejection in some way. And it might be quite subtle, it might be we just start an internal dialogue about something, we're talking to ourselves about it. And I think you've all read Pema Chodron, and I'm sure she's a very gifted, eloquent, and right on teacher for this process, of being able to be aware, accept what arises, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's unwelcome to us. But on the other side, not to feed it, not to get hooked by it, and then start building up the emotive pressure, not start starting a story about it. If we can just let it be, something wonderful happens. And the way I experience this is that I actually become more whole. Parts of me that I felt were unwelcome, I didn't want, I was actually willing to welcome. And when I do that, there's a huge relief. It's sort of no longer a problem. It actually doesn't arise so much. Or if it does arise again, I found a way of not getting hooked by it and can just let it be as it arises. I know early in my own practice, a lot of anger would start coming up. And once I started being able to process it this way, and the anger came almost without, after a while, without even consciously trying to do it, I would just let it be and it would just seem to fade away, or my attention or my energy that's locked up in the energy in the anger was then available for just dealing with life as it comes in a simple, straightforward way without getting caught up in the emotion. This is the way, and actually this is an old Zen teaching, one of the very early Chinese masters. And right now I forget just one, it might have been Basho, that said, on one side, don't try to avoid or suppress what's naturally trying to arise. And on the other side, don't react to it, don't indulge it, don't make a story about it. This is the path to liberation. The early Chinese spoke in a very simple, succinct way. And if you really reflect on it, well, there's a lot of richness in it. We can really unpack it. And I think more modern teachers would actually take a whole chapter or a whole book to talk about what they said in just one brief phrase. Lin Qi, another early master, I find myself reading more and more and actually finding the Lin Qi record almost is sufficient for me. I find I'm not reading so much other things now. And his central refrain to the people that were studying with him is, why don't you trust yourselves? He keeps on saying this. He says it rhetorically. Okay, what's your problem? I'll answer for you. It's lack of trust in yourself. And he's echoing the central teaching. At the heart of us, at the core of us, is a wonderful being, like that statue in the block of wood. It's like a great precious jewel. It's capable of bringing forth great light. And what he found with his students is they didn't believe it. They didn't have faith in it. And he was saying, trust yourself, trust yourself. And I find that helpful. And I know with people in Vancouver, at some level or another, they resonate with that. When we really trust ourselves, we all have moments where we do trust ourselves quite naturally, spontaneously, and our natural light shines, clear, simple, and straightforward. And this, in the Zen teachings, are called moments of sudden enlightenment. Clear, straightforward, we're not self-conscious. We're just responding completely intimately with that moment. But then the force of these old habitual patterns sort of start clouding it, covering it up again. So we continue with what's called our gradual practice. And at the time of the sixth ancestor, Hui Neng, or Eno, there's a lot of discussion about that in Zen. Well, is Zen sudden enlightenment or is it gradual practice? And they realize actually both people that do Zen practice experience both. And when we have little glimpses like that, perhaps there can be, perhaps early on in practice, oh, that was a little blip, you know, it felt good. But let's take a moment and just really notice what it is and appreciate it. Just to realize the potential, or what's at the heart of us, is there, and at times it shines through. As we continue our gradual practice of becoming aware moment by moment. How we are, how we respond. Not in a critical way, but just to learn. I wonder amongst you if you've reached or you find part of practice is that the more you do this, it becomes almost automatic, it becomes part of our being. at the beginning, we have to learn to practice. We become a little self-conscious, almost mechanical in the way we practice. But after a while, it actually becomes part of the way, part of our way of being. And we might notice ourselves not getting hooked, not getting caught up in some states we're in. We're able just to let it be, let it float away. So how is it for you? Are you beginning to find the more we practice, the more it becomes really part of us, part of our being? And we're able to become a little deeper, a little sharper in what we notice. So the practice that people like Pema Chodron or Basho talk about is a one of working with and gradually becoming free of difficult, unwelcome sort of emotions or responses that we find ourselves in. And it's so beneficial. Without that, we tend to be critical of ourselves. We get into judging ourselves. We actually start pulling ourselves down, which is a really, really sad thing to do. But we suddenly realize that's not who we are. This comes to another Buddhist teaching. Who we are, what's at the heart of our being? It's this wonderful dual-like being, capable of great light. But we have this habit of identifying with when we mess up or screw up with something, we start saying, I am this, I did this. And a Buddhist teaching is stop putting the I on it and just realizing it's something that comes up, it's a feeling we have, it's not actually us. It's an ingrained response we have. It's not us. In Vancouver, we chant affirming faith mind. And it's really saying, have faith. What we're having faith in is ourself. We might not believe it. I'm putting it rather humorously. But just understand the Buddhist teaching, the Zen teaching. We can call it Buddha nature, God nature, true self. You know, we can give it all sorts of names. More and more, I like the sense that the heart of us is this wonderful dual being, you know, capable of great brightness, great light, very clear, and like a diamond, doesn't get contaminated or scratched. And it's a gradual practice. Little by little, we come across this. And the more we actually experience it and get a clearer view from our own experience, not just reading, but actually an experiential understanding rather than an intellectual, that faith deepens. It deepens, and we realize how precious this is. It's not just the heart of ourself. To me, it's the heart of life itself, is to truly find ourselves. In the talk, I use the word intimate. And it's a common phrase these days in Western Zen. Maybe it's gone out of fashion. It seems like fashion's come in with words. There's the word intimate for a while. And it's a helpful word. It indicates our incredible closeness with everything. And I try in the brief instructions for all of us I gave at the beginning, I was trying to point to this. And we can look at intellectually when we look at the word codependent origination, shinata, and all these big Buddhist terms with all their understandings. I just want to say today that we can't exist without everything else. And we can look at it intellectually. Without food, we wouldn't exist. Without plants, without the air, can't exist. Without our parents, our society, we would never exist. Without the galaxies, we would have no place to be. This gives like an intellectual understanding that we can't exist apart from everything else. In fact, we're made up, if you like, of everything. Everything's part of us. The apples, the grapes I had this morning are now part of me. And actually, I'm part of everything. This world, this room, everything. Would be incomplete in some way if I wasn't part of it. It's a very large view. Sometimes we call it big self. It's more than our just individual, self. I gave instructions about sitting, and I'd actually just like to mention some tips, if you like, for kinhin, our walking practice, because I find in some ways, especially for newer folks, and I don't think there's any here, you walk practice for a while, but when I have newer folks, they seem to pick up what Zen practice is better with kinhin than with sitting. So when we do walking practice, first of all, it's not a meditation on walking. That's a basic sort of meditative practice of just being aware of something. So I want to suggest, when you walk, enjoy walking. Feel your body is walking. Appreciate yourself isn't up in your head watching anything. Yourself is boom, 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 just walking. Just fill out in a natural, physical way. And appreciate, enjoy the walking. And as you walk, you actually experience meeting the earth. We can't walk without walking on something, and it's tactile. It's an actually experiential thing, not just a theory. And as we walk, we don't walk in isolation. I love the fact that in our tradition we walk in step. I find it gives myself and everyone a sense that we're not just walking as an individual, we're walking as a group, we're also the group walking. It allows us like to open our consciousness, open this space, and to appreciate it's not just ourself, we're just simply walking, we're also the group walking. And as we walk, we hear the sounds, the car, the bicyclists, the birds. We walk with the trees, with the grass. And if we want to put it poetically, the trees and grass walk with us. Appreciate, come to appreciate as you do kinhin, that when we walk, we're walking with everything. Everything walks with us. And we begin to get a taste of these big Buddhist terms about codependent origination and all these other things that are so big they just overwhelm me. It's, if you can just get the simple experiential taste of it, this is much more real, is the way I see it. We begin to appreciate the fact that we can't be apart from everything. And this is what the word intimate indicates in the title. And it also starts opening up a whole field of practice. Being intimate, everything being part of us, us being part of everything. How do we live this way? How do we live this way? And the simple, most direct, almost blunt way of putting it, it's not so much of a narrow, self-centered way of living. It's a much larger way that both celebrates, and also we take care of things. We appreciate other things are with us equally. And without each other, we would actually can't exist. Is in some Buddhism, there's meal charts that express that when we take food, something has had to die in order for us to live. And this is just simple fact of existence. We can't take, like, the first precept too literally. We just in living, we kill in order for us to live. And it's the same with everything, because everything has to take something from outside of itself to exist. So we should recognize that, and when we look into it, not into in too narrow intellectual way, we just have a feeling of things like gratitude and respect that something died in order for me to live. It's not so easy in our modern world. If we want to go and buy something, often we go to a supermarket and it's there in its styrofoam tray with a plastic wrapping on it. And a long time ago, we had a couple practicing in Vancouver that lived way in the north, northern BC up towards the Yukon. And it was the custom then to go hunting. You go hunting for food. It wasn't hunting for pleasure or doing something. You go hunting and get an elk or a moose, sometimes deer, and you would cut it up and freeze it, and that would be your meat supply for the year. And I remember Patrick saying, it's when you have got the rifle, when you're about to kill something, you know, it's huge and majestic as a moose or an elk, you're very aware, you feel it in every cell, that something has to die for you to live. And actually this is, in some ways, it's more honourable way than just going to a supermarket and buying a little slab of meat, you know, in all its wrapping, where we're so distant from the act of something having to die, it just doesn't register with us. Practice becomes interesting when we start looking at how to live, because it's life itself that transforms us. It's life itself that teaches us how to live once this basic awareness has been established, this interconnectedness, this interrelatedness. For me, I enjoy discovering that. Sometimes I'm quite good at it. Sometimes I just seem to be zoned out, miss a lot. It just seems to be the nature of things. Parts of Buddhism spell out things. There's the precepts and many Vinaya instructions on how to live. But I feel it's really central to Zen is to discover this from life by just noticing how we live, how we interact with situations, and developing our own wisdom of how to live. I have the strong view that Zen belongs to what's called the wisdom traditions, you know, of all the traditions in the world. There's many wisdom traditions. And wisdom indicates it's something we cultivate ourselves. It doesn't come from the outside. We might get tips or hints. It might stir up our own creative way of gaining inside, of learning how to do things. But to me, a wisdom tradition is gaining our own wisdom from becoming more clearly aware of ourselves and noticing how we work with life, how we respond with life, how we respond to each other. maybe this reflects my character. I think I'm very much a person that likes to work things out myself. I don't like being told what to do. So maybe that's why I'm drawn very much to the wisdom traditions. I don't know, but that's how I see Zen and that's how I practice. Lin Chi, besides telling all his students, trust yourself, also said, don't seek adornments. Adornments come of their own. And this reflects this. Rather than putting on a... Many spiritual traditions are not critical of them. It's just their way and it's beneficial for people. Is adopting being nice, being polite and so on. And then she says, there's nothing wrong in this, but don't put it on as if you're putting on, you know, some clothes. Let it come really from the heart of your being. Let it be a natural upwelling. And through practice, in my experience, this happens, and I'm sure you're finding the same thing, little by little. Don't seek adornments. Adornments come of their own. But I remember my teacher, Sasaki Roshi, actually, saying, if your natural wholesomeness isn't arising, then maybe you better adopt some rules so you're not so destructive on life. And Lin Chi also said, simply practice and see how far you get in your life. And to me, what he's indicating, there's no real goal in life. It's what we do in Zen practice is becoming clear on the, how shall we put it, the quality, the way of being that really helps us be a human being together with this world, together with others. And I find Zen doesn't tell us how to deal with our problems. It's not a... I've never found Zen practice as a solution to the problems that come up in my life. But what I find is that it puts me in best shape to deal with the issues and problems that come up in my life so I can deal with them more effectively, more beneficially, more in a way that considers others, you know, not just myself. So as Lin Chi said, just simply practice. This is my teacher saying this, Koshin, way back. Said that religion is a Western word. When he grew up in Japan, the word shigyo or bukyo indicated really teachings for the foundation of life. This is a foundation for life. And once we get this foundation, when we really find the heart of ourself and start working with life from that point, we've reached really the core. And it's not as if that's an end in itself, but it's a very, to me, the sanest foundation to have as we keep engaging with life, working with life, that is beneficial, or is often said, is least harmful to ourself, honoring ourself and honoring everything we come across in our lives. Seeing you listen to my talk, actually, I feel something really good in me because, you know, I see in lots of faces like recognition of what I'm saying is an echo for myself and for everyone, like in the practice. And it's a really precious and wonderful thing, is we really get a taste of Zen practice when we get past the initial just heavy lifting of getting things moving and begin to appreciate. We begin to appreciate what begins to glow in us, which is ourself, of finding ourself, becoming I was going to say lighter in ourself. let me put it this way, I hope this comes across right. Zen practice is a serious thing, but it doesn't mean we have to be serious as a person. In a way, Zen practice is to come to appreciate, to enjoy being ourselves, but not in this narrow way of just myself, myself. It's being able to live with everything we come across, every person, everything, and just appreciate life at its core is actually very simple, very direct, very clear. We're in an age where there's very vast change. It's a very complicated life we live compared with 100, 200 years ago. And it's really easy to get bent out of shape by things. I really feel for younger people that maybe not on Vashon, but in the city, it's really difficult for them to really come with peace with the world that they're finding themselves, that they're coming into, that's the result of what us older folks have been doing. I'm talking just generally everyone, not just us here. And I feel a lot for very young people, especially in the city. It can be very hard. I'm told we've got a couple of counsellors in our stander up in Vancouver. Among them deals a lot with younger people, and anxiety is a huge concern with younger people. It's depression also, but it seems anxiety is becoming bigger a weight or something of younger people than even depression. And my own take on that is it's really difficult for me. I can imagine in my mind, but I don't really have a deep feeling of what it is to come into this world, especially in a city, and which seems so lacking in hope or future. But Zen practice can be a great benefit. I feel any sort of genuine spiritual practice, especially the ones belonging to the wisdom traditions, can be so beneficial in these difficult times. I know in America there's a lot of concern with how things have been degenerating, not just now. My own view is just over the decades and where it is now. But let's not forget that the same sort of thing is happening in so many other countries. You know, it's not just in our own little area. In some ways, so much of the whole world seems to be deteriorating. The environment is deteriorating. Now I'm beginning to get a bit dark at the end of the talk, and I certainly don't want to end that way. But what I'm trying to say, I don't know how well, is that Zen practice, or any practice of the wisdom traditions, is so essential these days. And the more you practice, and I think all of you have got a taste of that, of just how beneficial it can be. And I repeat again, it's beneficial because we're actually getting in touch with what's at the heart of us. We're in touch with the fact that we can't live without everything else. Before we start saying it's good or bad, or putting judgments on it, I like or dislike, of just being able to embrace it in a way, the wholeness of our situation. And then when we work with it that way, it's coming from a place of wholeness, you know, of integrity, rather than our own sort of biases, our own views, our own judgments. But this actually is opening up to a big subject, so I think I ought to stop now. Thank you all so much.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.